Hey, drama listeners, it's 2021, and on our Patreon, which is patreon.com/thedramapodcast, we have got, or is it backslash? I don't know. I guess it doesn't really matter. But anyway, we've got so much fun going on over there. In addition to everything you already know, access to the Instagram close friends, which is, honestly, we spill a lot of tea. It's pretty dramatic. But you get access to that. You get, you know, 2 to 5 bonus episodes a month, exclusive Zoom call recordings from some of your favorite episodes. It is amazing and so fun. And I just want to remind you that if you're not a Patreon subscriber already, go ahead and do it. You know, like I said, I gave you the website. You can also find it from all of our social media. It's $5 a month and you won't regret it. If you don't get your dose of drama enough from our weekly feed episode, you are in for a treat at our Patreon. Patreon-a.
Press play.
Curtain up and now we're in.
It's time to take a spin.
The shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book?
Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more.
Drama.
Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life
in New York City.
But you know what? We're not in New York City, and we haven't been so long. We need, you know what? I'm making an executive decision. We're changing our intro. This is a big moment in the pod.
We haven't changed the format in a long time, ever.
Even though you've wanted to cut literally every segment we've ever done, I think we need to say in New York City and beyond, or like, and the world.
We did say, and the world, when you know, the pandemic first hit and we were doing those, like, we're recording from home kind of vibes. We did say, and the world. So let's just do that, because it's funny, when we started the podcast, we were like, we want it to be in-person experiences. These are so valuable. And we had asked a few people to do the pod and they were like, well, I'm on the West Coast, so we could do it over the phone. And, you know, in November of 2019, we were like, oh my gosh, I can't imagine doing it.
Won't that be awkward?
And the magic's in the room.
Stumble over each other's connections. And then sure enough, everything's virtual, but you know.
I know, it's crazy, but I like that. We will make that adjustment.
Okay. Very good.
Also, this is a momentous recording, because I think this is the first Saturday night for us that we've ever done a pod.
Yes. How fun. It's like Saturday night on Broadway.
Oh, how fun. And you know what? We're going to a virtual engagement party later where we're all going to make cocktails. You know, a year ago, this would have felt so underwhelming, but I've been looking forward to this all week.
It's the social highlight. It's a social highlight. But for one of our fraternity brothers, who I know everyone's jaws are on the floor, scoop them up, fraternity. who, you know, is a gay man who's marrying his partner.
Oh my God. I know. He was one of the first gay friends we ever had.
I know. I would say he helped us come out.
My heart. I know.
We love you, Aaron.
Wait, Dylan, you're literally our college fraternity's advisor now, which is scary as hell.
And random, right?
I know.
It's just a virtual, you know, I posted like a little Insta announcement about it and people were texting me. They're like, you're never coming back to New York. What do you do? And I was like, you know, it's a virtual gig. Like, it's literally like once a month, low key. But I'm excited to give back to, you know, my college fraternity. Like, I know that the guest today is actually from our college rival, the University of Michigan, as we are Buckeyes for life.
Uh-oh.
But that only applies to sports. I don't think there's any other competition there. But I'm excited to give back. And, you know, I'm becoming a frat lord all over again. You know me.
It's funny how history repeats itself.
I know. Listen, let's bring in our guests so we can talk about their journeys and maybe we'll get into some Michigan stuff. Who knows?
Read us in, Dylan.
All right. It's time. Fade in on our guest today, a Missouri native who is a 2018 Tony nominee for Best Actress in a Musical for creating the literally iconic role of Regina George on stage in Mean Girls. For making the world burn on Broadway as the queen of the plastics, she also earned a Broadway.com Audience Award for Favorite Diva Performance, a 2018 Drama League Award nomination, and Outer Critics Circle nomination. Plucked from her college theater program to star in the tour of the unforgettable 2012 show Bring It On the Musical by Lin-Manuel Miranda, Tom Kitt, and Amanda Green, she then made her Broadway debut as Campbell Davis. Didn't know she had a last name. You'll know this gorgeous queen from playing Lauren in Kinky Boots on Broadway, as well as her numerous Muni appearances in Grease, Aida, Hairspray, Legally Blonde, and so much more. On TV, you'll absolutely recognize her from CBS's The Good Fight, Nick Jr.'s Sunny Day. Well, you'll know her voice. And playing Wendy in NBC's Peter Pan Live, HBO's High Maintenance, and the upcoming The Keenan Show on NBC. She co-wrote a teen musical, which premiered in 2019 at Ozark Actors Theater in Missouri, where she also volunteers. She also founded Write Out Loud, a songwriting competition for young, new musical theater writers. She's a teacher, a newlywed, and even recently finished her degree at the New School. Please welcome to drama, Taylor Lauderman.
Oh my goodness, you made me sound so fancy. Thank you for including my degree.
I remember that was like, it made like Broadway.com news, like when that happened. And I was like, that is amazing. Like, good for her.
Embarrassing.
How many classes did you have to do to finish your degree?
Oh, you guys, I started, so I was at the University of Michigan and I tried to go back there or like get credits or just anything. And they wouldn't do it. They wouldn't do online classes, which I wonder what they'll do now after the pandemic. So I looked at the New School and I think I started like 2 months before I got Peter Pan Live. So I was like, I have nothing going on. I'm unemployed. I'm going to sign up for 4 classes. And then I think I found out I booked Peter Pan Live like 2 days after the drop date for the classes. And I was like, no. So that's what I started. And I kind of scattered them throughout, you know, taking breaks when I had gigs and whatnot.
That's amazing. That's so admirable. Oh my God. There's so many, we left no stone unturned with that intro. So we'll try to talk about as many things as we can. But before we jump into it all, are you well? Are you doing well?
Oh, I'm so well. I'm so grateful for a lot of things. I'm working right now, which makes me feel very lucky. Most of the pandemic, I was able to teach young people about musical theater on Zoom, which I love. And just got married, feeling sort of normal in that sense, and bought a house and all that. And I kind of needed a little break from the theater grind, you know, 8 shows a week. And so I was okay with the stay at home business. I feel like one of the lucky ones for sure.
Oh my God. Aww.
I'm so happy for you. When did you get married?
I got married on Trump's birthday. You guys. Okay, I'm not a fan of that guy, but I didn't know this, and we got married down in Florida because my husband's parents retired down there, and I had no idea. We were getting married on this waterway inlet. I think like 20 minutes from where he lives, where his home is there in Florida.
Mar-a-Lago, is that? Does he live there?
Yeah, I don't know. But clearly I don't follow him because there was a whole parade of boats on the waterway, which was literally up against where we were having our ceremony. And I was almost in tears because there's like loud music and like Trump flags and all this stuff. And I was just like, no.
Oh my God.
We had already compromised so much of the wedding because of the pandemic. Yeah. Anyway, but they were gone by the time the ceremony started. It was perfect. So
thank goodness they were gone. That is terrifying. Were they blasting like YMCA, like Trump's odd theme song?
Oh, all the things, the half naked, you name it. Yeah.
Was that like April, something?
No,
like that?
No, it was in June.
June. Okay.
June 14th. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I'm just happy for you that you were still able to find like moments of light throughout this crazy year. But so where did you buy a house, if we may ask?
Yeah, I'm in Missouri, you know, closer to my family, not closing any doors in terms of career, but definitely having that as a home base and obviously traveling when I have work.
I respect that so much. Like that's, I think, what a lot of people are going to be doing going forward. And I mean, I don't know when I'll be going back to New York. My boyfriend and I are talking about moving in somewhere that's not New York this summer. And it's like, the plan was always New York, but you know,
I think
what's there
things will go
right
back
now
to semi-normal as soon as it's safe, but I think a lot will still be different. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm hoping I can still audition online, you know, self-tapes.
Oh, yeah. Now, you don't say Missouri like Missouri.
No, I'm not like that. Okay.
We saw that movie, the Three Billboards movie, and that's how everyone was saying it in that.
Yeah, they did.
Missouri is not known for many good things.
One of our best friends is from Maryland Heights outside of St. Louis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's I know where that is. That's amazing.
I love it. Oh my, of course, you have so many ties to the Muni and everything.
Yeah, I was going to say one good thing that I do about Missouri. I mean, I love lots of things about Missouri, but that it is known for in a good way is, I think, the theater community. It has a really strong arts community in St. Louis, and I think in Kansas City, too. But I was lucky to grow up nearby some of these really amazing opportunities.
Oh, my God, I love it. I was reading through some of your Muni credits, and I was like, I would pay all my money to see you in Aida. Oh my God. Is it really?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to give away my, like, my moment later, but it's tied to that place and that show. And I think my first show I ever did at the Muni as a teenager, you know, they have these kids and teens troops and it's so competitive. Like, I remember I auditioned 3 years in a row without making it. And my mom called them and was like, what can she do? You know, and they were like, nothing, just keep trying, you know? And I'm like, oh, so when I finally made it, it was huge. And I felt like the new girl. It was so, you know, especially as a teenager, you're just so insecure. I finally made it into one of the shows and I was a Nubian slave in Aida, which should never happen again. And
I don't think it will, but
but I was in the very back, you know, like 30 seconds on stage. Yeah. It was actually,
What number did they feature? Were you in like what's that? Is it called the Dance of the Robe? Were you in like that number?
Yes.
Oh, it's such a bop. Oh my God. Heather Headley. Oh, what I would have given to see her and Sherry Renee Scott. I would have been so thrilled.
I'm so obsessed. Yeah. So that's where it all kind of started.
Kind of bring in that segment because I think we're on the precipice.
I'm sorry.
No. This is exciting. I love it. I'm thrilled at how natural this segue was, but we like asking all of our guests about their Ring of Keys moment. You know, that moment of recognition where they perhaps saw a performance or a film or had some sort of artistic inspiration where they suddenly identified with themselves in the arts and they thought, oh my gosh, I need to be a part of that. Do you feel that you have a specific Ring of Keys moment or moments?
Yeah. So obviously going back to that, I was at the Muni. It's the world's largest outdoor theater. 11,000 people, I believe.
God.
Seats. And there are even free seats in the very back. The whole St. Louis community just embraces it. It's like a family tradition. It's magical. It feels like Christmas to me. So the moment I finally got to be in a show after, you know, going to see the shows and wishing I could be on that stage one day was magical in and of itself. But I think I have such a vivid memory of we're in rehearsals and the gal playing Aida, her name was Simone, and we were rehearsing Dance of the Robe, and you rehearse outside in a pavilion at the Muni. It's a huge pavilion because the stage is huge, so it has to be the same size. And we're outside, and we start the song, and everybody was just giving 150%, and she's just love is just exuding out of her heart. I don't even know how else to articulate it. And she starts crying mid-song. You know, the song is about giving people hope, right? And sort of amping up her community of people who have been beaten down for years. And she starts crying. And then it's like the clouds opened up and it starts pouring down rain. And mind you, we're in a pavilion, so we're not being rained on, but it's still just so insane how the wind takes the rain and we get a little bit wet. And then everyone else starts bawling too. And I'm just like a young teenager and there are, you know, many professional actors on there. I'm just like, what is happening? What is happening to me? Because it was sort of the first moment where I completely opened up my heart and allowed the story that I was telling, I don't know, be reality for me in that moment. Like, it was just, I don't know how to articulate it really. And after the song ended, everybody just like went in for this like group hug. And it was just that first time I really felt like, oh my gosh, I'm a part of something so much bigger than me. And we're a team and we're building this together. And then to go out on stage my first night, and at the Muni, when the show starts, it's still light outside. It's 8:15 in the summer. In fact, the sun doesn't go all the way down until intermission. And you can see all 11,000 people. And I just thought, oh my gosh, we get to let all of them in on this moment right now, you know? And that was just like, oh my, I think my heart exploded. And that was it. I was like, okay, done deal. Here I go.
Oh, that is beautiful.
I don't know if I explained it well enough, but.
Oh, absolutely.
You did.
I had chills. Cause you know, I think that that's like what the Ring of Keys moment is all about, you know? And it's that feeling that you don't experience too often, maybe only a couple times in your life, but how cool. Oh my God. I can't even imagine. I mean, that's bigger than some Broadway theaters. Oh my God.
Absolutely. And you know, I argue that with a lot of my students these days, like you can access that Ring of Keys moment, if you will, no matter what step of your journey you're at. It doesn't have to be on Broadway, right? You can find mm-hmm. that joy and that fulfilling, those fulfilling aspects in your local community theater or at school. You know, don't take those for granted. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I love that. Oh my God. And I think it's also inspiring to know that you had, I mean, there are people who want your career. They want to be you, you know, because you've been in these shows for young people, essentially. Like lots of people relate to Campbell. They relate to Regina and in a small way or whatever. And so to know that you auditioned many times and didn't necessarily get in until the moment was right. It's kind of inspiring to know, like, you know, Taylor Lautner didn't get in on her first audition. It wasn't, you know, easy peasy.
I also think it's so important. Like these kids or anyone, you know, you only see the highlight reel. Like you don't get to see mm-hmm. all the fails, like the hard fails. and there are many of them, right? But that's part of growing. So
absolutely. Yeah. So you did the Muni for, was it like every summer and then you went to college?
Yeah. And even when I went to college, I remember getting to Michigan and everybody's like, oh, we're auditioning at the Muni. And I was like, wait, what? We are? Great. You know? So I was like, great. Aww. I can still go home and do the Muni. I remember doing Footloose as an equity ensemble member.
Very that.
And so some of my old teens, mini teens, got to watch me sort of grow up into this more mature position, which was cool, of course.
Were you Ariel?
No, I was again in the ensemble.
Yeah.
I'm working my way up. Okay.
Yeah. And then when did you have your first, you know, starring role at the Muni then?
Well, actually the next year after Footloose, I was Margot in Legally Blonde.
Love.
And it happened to be the same year that Mike Isaacson was in his transition period. He was taking over as artistic director at the Muni. And speaking of Ring of Keys, he's a major producer on Fun Home and was on Bring It On as well back then. And so Legally Blonde was about to start in the summer and I had started auditioning for Campbell in Bring It On at the end of the spring of my sophomore year. Mind you, I had auditioned for two other roles in Bring It On, Ava and didn't get it, and then Skylar and didn't get it. So fast forward to the spring, we're in auditions for Campbell and I was flying to New York City. This was a huge deal for me because I had never done something like this before, auditioning for Campbell Davis in Bring It On in front of Lin-Manuel, Andy Blankenbuehler, Alex Lacamoire, Mandy Green, Tom Kitt, like all these people that I had studied on note cards at school that year. And I was in auditions with the girl who was going to play Elle in Legally Blonde later. And we both fly back to rehearsals for Legally Blonde. And I got pulled out of my music rehearsal to go to Mike Isaacson's office, who I had just seen at the audition in New York like days before, and got the phone call. And they, you know, were videotaping it and all telling me. And I was just like, oh my God, this is one of those moments. Like my life is going to change. You know, you envision yourself going back to your junior year of college and all of a sudden, just like that, you're like envisioning starring in this, right, this cool show that's going to travel. So that was such a moment, such a milestone in my life and career that I will.
Oh my forget. God. I can only imagine.
Yeah.
So did you end up ultimately doing Legally Blonde at all?
I did. I finished that out. Okay. And then I did Bring It On. And then, oh, to answer your question, sorry. I think my first role.
Oh, right. I'm like, what question did I ask?
Yeah. It was either Hairspray or Grease.
Oh, cool.
As Amber or Sandy.
Oh, so many like bucket list roles that you've got the chance to do, I'm sure.
Yeah. All the white girl bubblegum.
Then you like, obviously yeah. like skipping ahead down the line, like you got to kind of flip the script on that and play the mean girl, you know? So it's kind of cool that, like, you weren't typecast as like the innocent ingenue.
Yeah. I don't know what to say about that.
No, I'm just curious how Mean Girls came into your life. We need to talk about it, of course.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I kind of hit my lowest low right before Mean Girls. So I was doing a show called Ride the Cyclone off Broadway, and it had done really well in Chicago. So MCC was bringing it to New York. And I think the director was sort of pressured by them to hire New York actors. And I was one of those that replaced the Chicago, you know, cast. And yeah, I didn't see it coming, but they let me go. Like, I can't remember exactly, maybe 2 days before opening night. And I was devastated. I just was like, what did I miss? It's like a breakup where you're like, what? Where was my radar on kind of aging that I wasn't making them happy? And so I was like, this is probably a sign. I was starting to feel at that point like kind of just powerless as an actor. I was wanting to be more creative, wanting to have more control, artistic control. And so I was thinking about, you know, do I want to go back to school for directing? Maybe do I want to do other things? And anyway, so I was like ready to throw in the towel. And then I think my agent was like, I have an audition for Kinky Boots for you. And I was like, I auditioned for that this summer and didn't get it. I don't really want to do it. And they're like, no, come on, you should do it. So I did it and got it. So I'm going into Kinky Boots and I had a freaking blast. I loved it. I re-fell in love with theater and the cast was amazing. I was doing comedy, which was something I didn't know I was okay at. And I think I was like 2 months into that and all of a sudden Mean Girls comes in, Clueless comes in, and there's an audition for Frozen, and like all these things. I'm like, whoa, I went from, you know, 0 to 100. And Mean Girls, it was just, you know, an audition for The Lab, of course. So you didn't know you were signing on for Broadway at the time, but that was thrilling. Yeah. Just The Lab. And I mean, I love working on the workshops because I feel like that's where you really are most creative. You're shaping the show. Mm. You're giving it a life. And so, yeah, it was halfway through The Lab, I think, is when I got the offer to do the out of town in DC and Broadway.
Oh, my God. What a journey. I feel like there's so much in there I want to unpack for a sec. But going back to Kinky Boots, what who else were you in it with? Who is your Charlie?
I had a few Charlies. Killian Donnelly, the UK Charlie original. Uh-huh. And then I had Brendan Urie, Panic at the Disco, which was so much fun. And then a couple, I think, other guys came in. Andy Kelso for like a hot second.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We just had Stark Sands on a couple weeks ago and talked all about Kinky Boots.
Oh, he's so sweet too. I got to meet him a couple of times, but we never did the show together.
He's amazing. That is one of our favorite shows. And I understand where you would rediscover that joy. And there were so many ensemble members who stayed the whole run. Like it must have just been a great place to be, you know?
I think that, and not to knock on like Mean Girls or Bring It On, but when you're creating a new show, it's just in a pressure cooker. You know, everybody knows they're going to be reviewed, and it just there's a lot on the line, you know. But with Kinky Boots, it had already won the Tony Award. It was a well-oiled machine by the time I stepped in, and yeah, the ensemble members, a lot of them had been there for a while, so they were just like, look, we're here to have a good time. We're clocking in. You know, how was your day? It was just chill and fun. It was really fun. And yeah, and I loved making an audience laugh. I was like, whoa, this is cool, you know, because I mean, Bring It On had like its moments, of course. Jeff Woody's very funny, but not my character per se.
That's true. But you did get to sing One Perfect Moment, which is so good. Oh my God. I listen to that all the time. Oh my God. Love.
I know. Wasn't that on your Spotify Wrapped, Connor?
Yeah, it was. And I was like, this musical is not from this year or the last year or the year after. You know what was on my Spotify Wrapped a couple of years ago was Stupid with Love Reprise.
Oh,
isn't that fun?
Yeah.
Not the original.
I'm a sucker for a reprise or reprise, or you know, everyone says it differently. It's very tomato. But Taylor, I was thinking, you were talking about how Kinky Boots helped you realize you could do comedy or that you were funny. And I think that lended so beautifully to Regina, because I'm not an actor, but I will say I think there has to be a sense of humor in that portrayal, right?
Yeah, she has to know how to support, I think.
Yeah.
Because there are so many funny elements around. I mean, even Regina is funny and how ridiculous she is.
Oh my God.
So I definitely think it helped me understand comedy as a whole better. And it was so much fun. Oh my God. I especially loved her ending moments where she's wearing, you know, spoiler alert, neck brace and, you know, that was just a blast.
Oh my God.
To do that scene.
Yeah, that scene in the bathroom right before Stars. It's one of my favorite moments of the show. Absolutely.
Because it did definitely add so much more to the character, you know?
So much more depth, I think, than the movie gave us, but it's a different time. I mean, we call on that a little bit more now.
Yeah,
I think.
What was the dynamic like? Because the cat, it was probably similar to Bring It On in some ways, but you were one of the veterans. But I know there were a lot of newbies in Mean Girls, a lot of people making their debuts. What was the cast dynamic like, especially going from DC to Broadway?
Oh my gosh, it was like we bonded so hard. That once everything leveled out and the show had opened and the Tonys were over, everybody was like, we need a breather.
I can imagine.
Yeah, but it was just amazing. Gosh, I have so many good memories of that cast. And you know, it was hard because I remember, you know, it was sort of an ensemble principal cast in a sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, Erica's definitely carrying the show 100%, but lots of principal roles, lots of big parts. And then this ensemble of dancers who are working their butts off. And so that was hard, I think, at times because of that division of just, you know, we tend to lift up the starring roles more than those ensemble parts. But they were working harder. I mean, I was just walking around in slow motion. They were burning so many calories, you know. So that got weird at times because you want to celebrate everybody, but it was such a team effort. I think that started with Tina Fey and Casey Nicola, and just sort of making it feel like a collaboration, you know. Tina didn't walk in the room and say, okay, you do this, you do this, and you do this, you know. This is my idea and it's the best one. So here we go. And neither did Casey. It was very much like the best idea wins. Doesn't matter where it comes from. And that was key for having a good experience. I was so sad when the show opened, actually, because they were leaving.
Yeah. Oh my God.
How cool. What a unique experience to have Tina Fey.
I know. She's a genius. A genius. Oh,
yeah.
So good. I was thinking about that in terms of how it's a show where every performance has to work, right? Because it's not only this iconic film, but every storyline is so important to making the ending, you know, and the journey you go on with everybody. We actually saw the show like the night of the Tony, the night that the Tony nominations came out, or the day after or something.
The day after.
Mm-hmm. And I remember being like, why weren't they all nominated? You know what I mean? Like, it was one of those crazy things, but Taylor, what you were able to do with Regina was something so special. And I remember walking away from it being like, she didn't do Rachel McAdams. She did her own Regina. You know, and Rachel McAdams as Regina George is one of the most iconic.
My favorite.
I think that movie hinges on her and her A Star Is Born moment in it. And I think that was the same year The Notebook came out.
too.
Probably, if not really,
really close. She could really do it all. And, you know, it's interesting because I feel like Regina is the iconic character for Mean Girls. You know, she really is. And you slayed the house down boots. And I even went on the record saying that I thought you should have won the Tony that year. You were on my draft pick. It's true.
Thank you.
You took a role that I don't think anyone else could have done what you did, Taylor. And that's our criteria. That's our criteria, Taylor.
Thank you.
If no one else could have done it, then they should get nominated, let alone win. And oh my God, you were magical. Absolutely.
Did you enjoy playing Regina?
Of course I did. Is that bad?
Oh no, it's so good to be bad. No. It's like Taylor Swift said, I did something bad, so why'd it feel so good?
Yeah. I'd like to dissect that a bit more. You know, why was it? I think it's empowering, actually. Like, as much as she uses her powers for like bad, she has power and she owns it. I think that's what is so attractive.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. God. Oh my God. My favorite song in the show was Till Someone Gets Hurt. And that it was just, it's such a unique solo number for someone to have. Mm-hmm. It's oh my God. It was so good.
Oh my gosh. You should have seen it in DC. We were like, it was not, you know, on Broadway it was like the guys dancing behind me, which mm-hmm. made it just like, it felt like, you know, it has that James Bond feel. And then you have these like guys dance, like superheroes. And it felt so I don't know, supernatural in a sense. But in DC, we were like, there was a set piece that was the like kitchen island in Katie's, you know, house, because it's a party at her house. And Kyle and I were just like moving around the countertop. And it was just like a really speaky song. It was just so, the energies of the two and the differences were just extremely different. I was so happy when Casey came up with the idea to give me the guys and that James Bond feel, because it just helped me feel powerful.
Oh my God. And the vocals. I don't think I knew you could sing like that until I saw you in Mean Girls. Did they know you could sing like that when you got cast?
I don't know if I knew I could sing like that. I mean, I feel like it was so collaborative. Like, I know Jeff Richmond, Tina's husband, who wrote the music, was very open to ideas. And so there were times when I'd go in another room with Meg, who was one of the assistants, and play some things. And she would throw out ideas and I would throw out ideas. I even called one of my buddies, Nicholas Oliveri, who I know is like so good at making up riffs. And I was like, okay, what would you do here? And he would send me a voiceover recording. And I'd memorize it. I'm not very good at improvising with music. Musically, I have to rehearse it. I have to get good at it.
Sure.
And so, but he is. So I worked on that pretty hard, because I wanted Regina to show off in every any opportunity she could without making it seem like I'm showing off, you know. I felt like that's what the role needed too. And so I'm glad, I'm happy to hear that, because it was something I was hoping for.
Oh yeah. Wait, doesn't Nick Oliveri, doesn't he do a lot of the backup stuff with Ben Rahala
at the I think so. Stuff like yeah.
That? I definitely know his name.
Yeah. He's so talented. He's one of those people where I'm like, oh, he's 10 times more talented than I have. He just hasn't had an opportunity yet, you know?
And speaking of Ben, of course, you two have your Write Out Loud co-collaboration project.
Yeah.
How fun. And the music is unbelievable.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. It's been a really big surprise. I kind of did it because I was getting bored at Mean Girls. I wanted to do something with the following I had. And I was like, you know, like actors can go to an open call and get their stuff seen. But like for a musical theater songwriter, like a young person who's like, I have no idea how to start getting in this world. It seemed really hard. So I was like, how could I connect? How could I help? So that's what came of it. And then we got 500 song submissions. I was like, when am I going to listen to all of these songs?
I know. Oh my God.
What did I do to myself? And one of them has really found success.
Yes.
I don't really understand, not how, in the sense that the song is amazing, but I just mean, I don't understand TikTok and YouTube and the fandom thing, whatever, but yeah, it's really taken off. And I've been surprised. And from a business standpoint, I don't know what I'm doing, you guys. Like, I did not prepare for this, for a big success like this. So I'm learning so much about the music industry and kind of, you know, making this into a nonprofit and just all the ugh, stuff that comes with it.
Wait, so the song that, that took off is the one that you sang, right?
Yes.
Right. Well, that's part of the reason why, girl.
I don't know. But the story, I think, really relates, I think, for a lot of young people out there.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, it was by Jariah Kwame, Little Miss Perfect. And apparently there's a Disney show called Owl House that sort of follows that same similar story. Okay. And some of the fans on that picked it up and turned it into an anime. And now it's got, I don't even know how many views on YouTube, but a lot. I think.
That's
so
awesome.
It's awesome.
That's the power of what you created. You know, you amplified that voice.
Yeah, it's so cool for Jariah. I think he's gotten a lot of opportunities from it. He's writing a musical out of it. So it's really rewarding. Like it's a lot, it takes a lot of my time, but it feels good, you know? So, I'm proud of it. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. You know, it's crazy. I was thinking about TikTok this morning, and when I was younger,
as one does, right?
As one does, yeah. But I in high school could barely in computer class put, you know, do Photoshop and move one person's head on top. I couldn't do it. So it blows my mind that people of all ages are able to make these incredible creative experiences to consume on TikTok. It's beyond me. I mean, they are going to get jobs out the wazoo in the professional world. Meanwhile, I'm still like, I cannot even make a meme.
Figuring out.
For real. I am curious about Keenan Thompson, who I can imagine, I think we're around the same age, Taylor. So all that he was on, you know, he's been doing television, you know, and now you're working with him on his like debut. It's a sitcom. Is it a single cam or a multicam?
It's a multicam, single cam type feel. It's like,
I love it.
Kind of, but it's not like live audience or anything. Mm-hmm. But yeah, oh my gosh, I'm a really big fan of his, from Keenan and Kel, all that to, his ooh, wee, what's up with that? What's up? Yeah. So I've been having a blast on this show. I can't reveal too much or I'll get in trouble, but, it's really funny, family oriented. I think it's exactly what we need right now. And just has a lot of different characters that you wouldn't put in the same world working together, which I love.
Oh, fun.
So I'm excited. It's so weird though, working on television and without a live audience. So I did a multicam pilot last spring and we had an audience. So I got so used to in Kinky Boots, like knowing whether something was funny based on the audience reaction. And I almost got obsessed with like the science of comedy, right? So one night you react like one way and you get a laugh. So you're going to turn up that dial for tomorrow night to see if you can get even more of a bigger laugh. And you keep turning it up and turning it up as long as the laughs, you know, and then once the laughs go down, you know, you've gone too far. So you can find like the pocket where it's funniest, right? Well, I was able to do that a little bit on that sitcom pilot, but this doesn't have a live audience. So we're doing scenes and nobody's laughing. And I'm just like shaking with fear because I'm like, this is bad. This is bad. I'm going to get fired, you know? But Keenan and the writers are all like, no, trust, you know, it's good. It's going to be fine. But it's so scary. Like I'm so nervous for it to come out because I don't know. I don't even know what take they use. You know, I'm the last filter in theater. I know what the audience is going to get from me, but,
yeah.
But from television, you have no idea. It's way less control. Yeah,
that is so interesting. It reminds me of like how some people are doing performances on Zoom or like they'll do like I've seen like comedy shows and stuff happening on Zoom. And I don't know how people do that, like without that serotonin coming from the audience.
Me neither. It's kind of like TikTok maybe.
It is. Yeah. That is crazy. You know, like I'm thinking about some of the funniest shows that I love, like, you know, Tina, speaking of Tina, like 30 Rock. So funny. There was no laugh track there. I mean, there was no one on set cracking up at these one joke a minute lines. So I can imagine that is such an interesting new challenge, you know?
Yeah. It's been something I have to adapt to. I don't think I've quite gotten to the other side of it yet, but hopefully, yeah, hopefully it's good. I'm playing such a different character than I've played before, I think. So fingers crossed.
But you get to be funny, and that's what you can reveal. So
I love it. Yeah.
Switching gears, we like to talk about love on the pod, and you told us about when you got married. Tell me about this hot husband. What's the love story? I need to know it all, Taylor.
It was like during Tony's. Let's see. We met on June 25th. So it was right after the Tony's. And oh, wow, we met through a mutual friend at a birthday party. And I remember my girlfriend calling me and being like, hey, there's this cute guy. And he's going to be at my boyfriend's birthday party. You should come and meet him. And I was like, okay. So it was between shows on a Saturday, you know, but I've got my lashes on, my makeup done. So I'm like, okay, fine. I'll go. And I go and I say hi to him. He's really shy. And then it was at the it's one of those boats on the pier over on the east side.
West side.
Anyway.
Is it the Chelsea Pier type area?
Kind of over there. But it was like a restaurant on one of the boats. Anyway, so there was a unisex bathroom. So I go down to the bathroom with my girlfriend and I am waiting for her. And he comes out of the bathroom and he didn't wash his hands. He'd be so mad at me for telling the story. He didn't wash his hands. So I was like, oh, this is an opportunity. I'm going to go give him a hard time. You know, because I was used to like hanging out with the tech guys backstage and we give each other a hard time. And that's how we show our love. You know, like that's how we talk. So I'm like, I know how to speak guy language, straight guy language. And so I go up in front of all of his friends and I'm like, so you don't wash your hands. And he was like, and turns away. I was like, oh my God, what am I doing? And that was kind of that. I had to leave to go back to my show. And my girlfriend calls me and she's like, hey, so apparently you guys matched on a dating app a while back. And I was like, what? Yeah, I guess we matched on, I think, Hinge or something 6 months ago from that moment. And I looked back and I was like, we so did. And I said, hi, you guys. I said, hi. That was my
game. I have chills. So I have chills.
And he didn't respond. So
but
I didn't recall that.
He remembered though.
He remembered exactly. So I was like, all right, that's strike two for me, you know, after that meeting. I was like, if he wants me, he's gonna have to put in some work.
Yeah.
But I had followed him on Instagram, and I guess that's also like another try on my part. So it was kind of three strikes. Anyway, he messaged me and that's that.
Is he kind of shy?
Yeah, I wouldn't say he's shy, but he's just so considerate that he's never going to make himself like the main event. I don't know. Uh-huh. He's truly a human angel in my opinion. But yeah, he's just very considerate all the time. Very patient. I feel very lucky.
Oh my God. He sounds like a dream. Now, how soon after the Insta DMs did he come and see the show? Oh,
good question. So I've been kind of going on dates and I don't know. I didn't like how once that was known or like that I was in a show, I don't know. That just became like I felt like it became who I was. And I wanted somebody who was going to like love me long time, you know, like when I'm not starring in a Broadway show. So I really tried to make him wait a while. Plus I'm playing the bad guy, you know? So
right.
I think he probably waited like 2 months or a month.
Wow.
To see it. Yeah.
What if he like secretly like did the rush and like, was on, like the front?
I mean, like, he's not a big Broadway person. I mean, he appreciates it, but I doubt that he did that, which is okay, which is fine.
That's good. Yeah, that's good. That is so cute. I'm so happy that you've tied the knot and that he even, you know, likes Missouri, you know, like, that's awesome.
Isn't that great?
Is he from Florida then, if that's where his parents ended up?
He actually grew up in Bronxville, New York. So,
Minutes
north of New York. But his parents just retired down in Florida. So, not a lot of ties in New York anymore. So, Missouri, yeah, he was fine with it, which I'm like, oh, thank goodness. Because it's where all my whole family is. So.
I know. I'm like, thank God my boyfriend's from Ohio originally. Because it's like, that's where I want to end up with where my family is. So.
Yeah, and like our rent, I mean, our payment on our house is less than my studio apartment in New York. So That's nice. Yeah. Maybe not more.
That's wild. Meanwhile, I'm like trying to get back to New York and everyone's like, you're crazy. But I don't know.
It'll come back. I do think so. New York is invincible, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's that feel, that vibe you get. I don't know.
Yeah, it is invincible. I love that. That's so cool.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not like in the physical sense, but just that community aspect, I think. Everybody in that concrete jungle grinding away, taking pride in living like savages.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, in a sense, we do, right? It's like, but it's yeah, I love beautiful. It.
Okay, so we're wrapping up here and we like to end on a dose of drama, which is where we like to share, you know, maybe something we're feeling dramatic about. Could be a piece of culture that we're consuming that we want to share with the listeners. Could be anything. And I need to start because moments before we started recording this episode, Dylan and I were cracking up because neither of us had a dose of drama today. We were like, what do we do? What do we do? So we texted like 10 different group texts. And we were like, what do we say? What do we say? And my friend, who I will leave nameless, said, here's a good one. Talk about how Amanda Gorman, who's the, you know, the new poet laureate for the country, how she was offered a coat by Maya Angelou, but she turned it down for the inauguration, to which we all were like, wait, Maya Angelou is sadly not alive anymore. So how is this even real? And we were cracking up because it was truly inexplicable. It was actually Oprah who offered Amanda the coat, which this is drama because Maya was one of Oprah's mentors. But other than that, why would you turn down an Oprah coat? Amanda, come on.
Well, Amanda's coat was gorgeous. It was that yellow.
It was beautiful, but I was cracking up. I was like, this is so silly. I can't even. And our friend, of course, was embarrassed. And she was like, no, I mistyped. It was Oprah. But anyway, drama. Amanda's amazing, though, by the way. I'm obsessed with her.
I was so impressed. I don't know. I can imagine in those moments, like, I've been in one of those moments before where, like, a producer has offered to, like, give me a ride back to, like, set or something. And I'm like, oh, this would be awkward. I don't want to make them feel like they have to do this for me or whatever. But then you're like, oh, but if I turn them down, that seems weird too. Mm-hmm. You know, so maybe it's something like that.
Probably right.
I don't know.
I totally see what you're saying. After our summer theater auditions for West Side Story in the summer of 2009, Connor and I were walking home from the community theater and the director, an iconic local legend, Bonnie LaConte, offered to drive us home. And we were like, no, because we didn't want to suddenly
It was that.
That's weird.
Good reference point, Dylan. Dylan, do you have a dose of drama today, tonight?
I do. And, you know, I love when I can involve our guest in my dose of drama. And don't worry, you didn't do anything wrong, Taylor. It is that the it's something that I'm bitter about. And I've gone on the record on our Patreon talking about this too, was that in 2018, all of the incredible musicals that were nominated for Tonys were basically like snubbed ultimately from getting the award because of this whole like message they wanted to send about like original art or whatever. And the tea is now all the musicals in 2020 that were nominated are all jukebox musicals and whatnot. And I just, you know, I have to laugh. They were rude. They denied Tina her Tony. Like, there are Ethan Slater his Tony, Taylor Lauterman her Tony. I'm just kidding. not to besmirch any of the other winners, but I just feel like maybe they were wrongfully discredited when it came time to checking off the awards. And that is my drama.
That's so interesting. I thought about that a lot because, of course, I was in the thick of that. But, and I'm mostly coming at not from individual performances, but from the shows themselves. You know, I've always thought I've always felt like award shows celebrate the pieces that push society forward a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And versus the ones that are commercial success, right? The ones that are like making the most money and have the most fan base, you know. And so I see both sides of that because like on one hand, I feel like we need more stories that aren't mainstream because that's what pushes us to get outside of our comfort zone and see other perspectives, right? Like Mean Girls, although I love it, don't get me wrong, it's something we all already know and love, you know?
Uh-huh.
So I was like on both sides of that. Like on one hand, oh my gosh, our show was awesome. Come on. And then,
yeah.
And then totally understanding, you know, the band's visit. It's just different, like almost a different art form.
Very much so. Completely. Completely. I appreciate your perspective, Taylor. Thank you. I'm being a bitter Betty, but
you, know. you did win the favorite diva performance, Taylor.
Yes, I feel very good about that.
Yeah.
No one can take that away from you.
Thanks.
Do you have a dose of drama today, Taylor?
I don't know. Something I've been thinking about is, I want to hear your perspective on it. I feel like a lot of times actors are really powerless unless they're the 1%, like big star. So often when it comes to like business aspects, you know, versus their pay versus producer pay. For example, something I'm learning with my Write Out Loud things, and I know these aren't actors, but they're the artists. There's a lot of royalty payments that the artists never see. It's something that I felt a little bit during my time at Mean Girls, also in terms of access. So I'm like, there are two different, I maybe get in trouble for saying this, but there are two middlemen before an actor gets the part that it has to like go through. So you have like the casting director and the agent. And then sometimes there's like a whole nother third party and all these people are paid. So something that's been on my mind is like, oh my gosh, am I going to give it away? Like it's starting an app where actors can just like submit their auditions and they're like these filters and they reach the casting office, sort of like streamlined, whatever. So it's kind of a double whammy there, but that's what on my mind that I think is dramatic.
I love it. That is drama. I love the idea. And the idea of the concept of actors being powerless, it is true. And it baffles me because everyone's always like, oh, you're replaceable. You're this, you're that, whatever. But I truly don't understand why like producers, like the powers that be feel like they have such power, I suppose. You know what I mean? Because it's like
money.
Money and you sign away your life sometimes. Like, I mean, I don't get me wrong. Like I was paid well enough for Mean Girls. It's not necessarily about that, but just like taking ownership over sort of like my Instagram, you know, not being able to say certain things I don't know, just so many creative elements too that you don't feel a part of. Like so often you feel like the robot just reciting the lines in a sense, even though you're like, I helped build this thing, you know? So bizarre. And I'm dissecting it more and trying to like understand my feelings on the matter, but I hear more and more people feeling that way. And I talk to more and more sort of new actors in the business who do feel powerless as well, but they're sort of the mindset of like, I don't deserve this, you know, yet because they haven't experienced. And that was me too. Like I'll do anything, whatever you want, you know? It was totally me years ago, but it's something that I think about and how can we, you know, maybe it's like the union doubling down or how can we empower ourselves a bit more? And maybe things like TikTok are helping because you're now the writer and the artist and the actor all in one.
Yeah. You are so insightful. And I think that's there has to be a reckoning coming because, I mean, this goes back to even back when A Chorus Line was created, those actors were hardly given their due for literally giving their life stories for those roles. And, you know, it goes up even as recently as Hamilton, like those actors had to bargain in order to get royalties and everything. So it's even the whole lab versus workshop thing. Like there's so many systems in place that like leave actors to feel powerless.
So weird. It's such a like team oriented collaboration in growing the art. But like the business side is so not that.
Especially because even like, I'm sure there's lines in Mean Girls or moments in Mean Girls that are there because of you, you know, and that's just one example, but, or Bring It On or, and so forth. So I hope that we see a reckoning with the actors getting their due.
I think it's moving. I do. I think there's momentum, but producers are so powerful.
I know.
They're so rich too.
Yeah, which is weird, right?
Like, I want to be rich.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But anyway, that's what those feelings, I guess, inspire me to produce more. Like I'm really enjoying working for my theater back home where I grew up, just like a little regional theater and doing Write Out Loud and things like that, where I've been on both sides. So I want to treat artists well.
I love that.
We need people like you.
Yeah, you have exceeded all expectations. Everyone said you were the sweetest, but you're also like dedicated to bettering the other people around you and lifting up voices.
Well, why not? Why wouldn't we?
I hear ya.
Come on, world. Do it. I think this year is going to be much better. These next 4 years.
Oh, yes. I feel better waking up every day. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for doing the podcast, Taylor. I told you this. I think I told you this before we started recording, but whenever we're like, who do you want to hear on drama? Your name is submitted and we are so thrilled that you're part of the drama family now. Yes. And everyone follow Taylor on Twitter and Instagram at TayLizLou. Or Lau?
Yes.
Lau? Oh my God. That's one of those things where like I've read it forever, but I've never said it out loud. Like when I was reading Harry Potter as a kid and I was like, it's Hermione. And
yeah.
Yeah, whatever. And then I see it on the movie and I'm like, I was so wrong. But you're right. It would be Lau because your last name is Louderman.
I guess. But I think Taylor's Lou sounds cuter. It's cute. Like Cindy Lou.
Yeah, it's cute. It's cute.
Yeah. That is so cute. Oh my God.
Thank you for your time. Thank you for your time today, Taylor.
Of course. It's my pleasure, you guys. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And everyone follow at the Drama Podcast, at Connor McDowell, at Dylan McDowell.
Yes. And Connor, we will see you next time.
Drama.